in a town like Rochester, when there's a new restaurant that opens up, it's like this shiny object in town, and the first few months everybody flocks it just to check it out and, you know, support and stuff like that. But as an entrepreneur on the other side, you don't really know your true numbers of where you're at because you're going through this honeymoon phase basically with your business. In Manorville and Caston and small towns, it's kind of the opposite, where you're battling upwards and you have to prove yourself.
In a small town, part of the magic of it is everybody knows everybody and you have that trust, and like all of a sudden a new entrepreneur shows up in town and you're from the big city nearby. We don't know you.
Yes.
So we're going to make steak in our backyard tonight. Well, it's been a real growth journey for you. And if you just had to, you know, talk to anybody that's looking at the restaurant industry, what would be some of the things that stand out to you as far as advice that you might recommend?
Yeah, I would say to...
Welcome to the Real Growth Podcast. I'm excited today to learn more about Miguel's journey as what I know, a restaurateur, entrepreneur, a real estate agent. We're going to learn more. And really, this is kind of selfish for me. I love your restaurant. And so that's why I want to talk about your restaurant to kick it off. Your guys' food is delicious. And I would say the setting, when you go there, it's just a cool setting. Like, we've sat on the patio. You guys have in the winter done like the igloos.
Mm-hmm.
We sat in the igloos before. And then obviously in your restaurant with the vaulted ceiling and such. And it's a really cool place. So let's start there. Let's go easy, Miguel. Yeah. Go ahead and introduce yourself and share about what's on the menu at Hidden Pines Restaurant.
Yeah, well, my name is Miguel Aguilera, for those of you that don't know. Hidden Pines, we've kind of focused on, I don't say necessarily healthy, but just things you haven't really seen before. And if you have, we do a little twist to them. So we've become really popular, known for our rice bowls.
Hmm.
So just bed of rice and then just whatever ingredients we can put together to make it work. We've just focused on that. So, but everything's made from scratch. So it's really high quality stuff, I like to say. So,
and even simple things like the celery sticks.
Mm-hmm. Cucumber sticks.
There we go. So, because you'd think they would be celery,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And so the cucumber sticks, like I was telling a friend of mine, and he's like, "They're just cucumbers." I'm like, "I don't know. They're good. Yeah. They're like really good."
No. See, everything from our menu has been just kind of from a bit of piece that we've taken from every restaurant we've been to across the country that we've liked.
Cool.
So there's this little place up north in Brainerd, that's off the, in Brainerd you get Gull Lake, so we go up there quite a bit, and so all the restaurants on the lake are just always busy, you know, in summertime, and there's this small like dive bar that's got cucumber sticks that is always busy because their food's so good. So when we thought of Hidden Pines, we're like, we have to bring those cucumber sticks. And whenever I'm at a table and they're asking me, "Hey, what are these cucumber sticks like? Are they fried?" I'm like, "Oh, they're just cucumbers. They're cut in stick form. That's about all you get with them.
And they taste good. Yes. You get ranch with them if you want."
So we hear that a lot. That, "What do you do with them?" I'm like, "I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, seriously, we cut it."
And I think it's part of it just not being used to that, right? You're so used to French fries. Mm-hmm. You're so used to what you'd maybe get at a typical small town restaurant. Mm-hmm. And you've done a nice job with that restaurant. And the other one is the sweet potato.
The dip.
Yes. So we'll talk about that dip. What is that exactly?
Well, it's a marshmallow based dip. So a lot of people, when they see it, it looks like ranch, but they're very surprised when they dip their fry in there and it's not ranch at all.
Yeah.
We've seen a 50-50 split. People either really love it and will die for it, or they just don't want anything to do with it. And it's just funny. But again, one of those things that was inspired by that restaurant up in Brainerd. They had a similar thing. We changed our recipe quite a bit, but, just something different, something people don't expect on their plate. And now I feel like it's become a staple. If you have sweet fries anywhere, you want to have some sort of dip with your sweet fries. So,
yeah, the marshmallow dip specifically. Yes. Buy it in a gallon
exactly.
container.
Yes.
So let's talk about this growth and, you know, this journey. Did you ever imagine you were going to own a restaurant? Was it ever a dream of yours of Danica's? Maybe share a little bit about Danica and how you guys met and getting into the restaurant business.
So growing up, my dad worked for Victoria's Restaurant, and my mom did too for quite some time. So I grew up kind of in the same in the restaurant too. So, you know, from the age of 5, I remember being in the kitchen there, you know, on summer break, and then I go down into the Subway, go to Dairy Queen and Carol's Corn, and I used to spend all my summers there. So I grew up in the business with my parents there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I got to that point, that age where I just wanted to do nothing to do with the restaurant. I was like, I need to do something completely different. So I've done, you name it, I've probably done it. Like, I used to sell suits at Men's Warehouse. I sold TVs at Best Buy, like anything you could think of.
That wasn't the restaurant.
Correct.
Business.
Just something I was like, I needed something different here. But it, at some point, I went back to the restaurant, and then the idea for Tap House West End came about. And
so you were working at Victoria's when Tap House West End
was about to open.
Okay.
Yes. And Natalie had asked me if I would think about being a manager at Tap House West. And, you know, without hesitation, I was like, absolutely. Like, I'd love to be part of the whole process there. So we did that. And Danica worked at Downtown Tap House at the
okay.
time. And so they were kind of merging, team, making a team at West End to start with. And she was part of that team. So she was just a server at Tap House West. And I met her there, didn't even think much of it. And then all of a sudden one thing led to another and people kind of connected us. And, you know, we started talking and dating, of course. And, you know, I was her manager. So I'm like, hey, you know, you're not going to get free shifts or good shifts. But no, long story short, I stepped down to become a server. And one summer we got offered the opportunity to go up north to Gull Lake and to be able to open up and help out at a restaurant up there.
Both of you did?
Both of us. Because it was one of her college friends
okay.
That had a connection. She just offered up and we're like, well, Tap House West is going really well and they got a good team. So we checked in with Christina and Natalie and see if that would be a good thing. And, you know, they were all on board, which is awesome. And
isn't that cool yes. when you have like people that support your vision and
yes.
your dream in a work environment such as that, even if it doesn't directly benefit them? I
correct.
Mean, because you leaving, they're, I mean, it's like, darn it.
Yes.
It's yeah. tough to find good people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, absolutely.
But they supported you through that decision.
Yes. And it was one thing where, you know, we could have easily been like, hey, well, like, we're just going to go and whatever happens, happens. But it was very important for us to get their approval because obviously they've been there for us through since that time, till that time. So it was very important for us to make sure that they were good with us going before mm-hmm. we made a commitment. And yeah, they were on board, which is an awesome feeling. So we went and worked.
And what was that like? So like you went, I mean, did you have to find an apartment? Did you have to rent a house?
No, like- so we're blessed in that part where Danica's parents had a cabin up there.
Nice.
And we just kind of stayed there for the summer. And
so she's already familiar then with the Gull Lake area.
Yes.
And did she know the restaurant? Like, did she visit it when she was growing up?
Yes, but okay. it was different. And so it was like on a resort that had been going through its changes in the restaurant. From when she was a kid, had gone through like three different owners and just changed and just a lot of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So we got up there and, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, they're going to ask me about menu items or like how to make a kitchen run better. And it just was not that at all. It was like, you're a server. And I'm like, oh, okay, like no problem. Like, I'll help you serve. That's what you need of me. And then it was almost like one of those episodes of like Bar Rescue, if you've ever seen that, where you're just like, what is going on? Like,
because you were coming from a high performing, busy
yes.
restaurant in Rochester, Minnesota.
Yes.
And again, I'll relate this a little bit to your restaurant now, small town Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. there's just a different vibe to small
yes.
town Minnesota. So there's a little bit of that going on mm-hmm. combined with the way they were probably running their business as everybody does it
yes.
different.
Yeah, 100%. And to this day, even at our restaurant now, Danica and I look at each other sometimes. I'm like, oh, if Christina and Allie were here, like what they would say in that
yes.
situation. And it's yeah. like, we still use that to this day. And
yes.
we were up there. I'm like, oh,
great
if
mentors.
They saw this. Yes, 100%. I'm like, if they saw this, they'd be like, what is going on? You know? So long story short, we had the idea to open up a little food shack off the lake, but on the lake really, but not connected to the restaurant.
Okay.
They had the space there that they used to sell ice cream out of. And so we were like, well, the restaurant gets really busy. It needs some sort of help during that busy time, but it's not, there's no amount of employees is going to make that go smoother. You just need an outlet somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the shack. We put a hood in there and everything and put some, you know, not like electrical kitchen equipment in there. And we were like selling burgers and tacos and stuff out of there. And
during the summer months.
During the summer months.
How hot was it in this little shack?
Really hot because there's no fan. And you know, there's a hood system that takes all the steam and grease out.
Oh,
but
man.
No fan. You gotta open the window up and nothing, you know. So it was, but it was, you know, it was one of those things where it's like we learned a lot during that summer.
Mm-hmm.
We would, because it'd just be us two. We had no other employees to help us or coworkers,
which is kind of a cool thing because it's not big and it's like
right there's no space for anybody else
right.
That being said, we would get up in the morning and, you know, 7:30 and prep the food and get it ready to go. And then when time came to open up, we would bartend, and because we had a mini bar in there too. So we'd bartend and I'd be making the food and dishing it out and just doing everything from scratch.
So just to get the story right, this is after you decided to this venture that led you up to Gull Lake. You're like, you know, we're not going to keep working here. It's just not for us. We're going to start this little shack thing. The opportunity presented itself.
And it was the same restaurant, same resort that we stayed at, just not in their restaurant.
Got it. To help them.
I see.
Okay. Yes. So it was still under their umbrella.
Yes.
But you were the two responsible employees of theirs to build this thing out and make it go.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Got it.
And so, like I said, we learned how to order food. We learned how to prep the food, which I kind of knew a little bit about, but not to this extent. We did that for a whole summer, and we made a menu from scratch, and it was super cool. Come summer end, of course, you know, everybody knows this, that goes to a lake is once the fall starts to come, it's like starts to die down slowly.
What month is that, August? September?
I would say late August,
First
week of September, maybe is like the official like cutoff, and it's just so sad. It's like everybody's putting their boats away. Everybody's just like back to school.
Literally. And you're still there.
We're just like
everybody's going home and you're like, I have to still be here.
Yes. And then kind of dominoes started falling and we're like, okay, it's probably time we go back home.
At that point, did you think you would come back the following summer? Was that still like part of the conversation between?
It was, but it wasn't. Like, we kind of expected to be called back up.
Okay.
But if we didn't, and we came to help, and if we did that, then great, and whatever happens, happens.
So I got to ask this question.
Yes.
You go up there and you're dating.
Yep.
And you go on this adventure to just explore this opportunity. How were your parents in this thought of like, I'm going to Gull Lake? Like, what did your parents think about this whole thing?
Yeah, so it's funny because we had actually started talking, like actually talking probably that August before. So not even a year later, we're going
to Gull Lake.
Yeah, May time. May, June. We're like, hey, we're going. What do you think? But obviously with their permission, we're like, what do you think? And both her parents and my parents are okay with it. I think it's one of those things where we've kind of earned their trust in that sense, just with what we've done in our lives and stuff. So, we still look back to that to this day. And randomly I'll ask Lori, Danica's mom, be like, Lori, why did you guys let us go? Like, I'm just curious. Like, why would you even trust us to do that? And she goes, I don't know. Like, she's like, I can't give you an answer. I just said yes. So to this day, they don't know why they let us.
Funny.
But it was awesome. Glad they did, because we wouldn't be here, truly.
So it's getting depressing. The fall is setting in. You guys are up there. I mean, another thing you learned through that experience is just working in close vicinity. Like, you had worked in the same restaurant, but it sounds like the shack. You're like elbow to elbow. Like, pass the cheese, okay?
Literally.
Here's the cut, right? So, I mean, you really get used to working with each other in that environment.
Yeah, and we learned a lot about each other that summer, which is good, but you know, they say working with family or friends is the hardest thing to do, and it truly is. But I think it kind of, if it's the right people, it pushes you to be better. You know, obviously you have your days where you're not agreeing on anything. And we went through those days too, where it was like, okay, maybe we should just stop. Like, what are we doing here? But I think we learned that summer how to work with each other and what strengths we have and weaknesses and how to play off those things.
So fall's setting in. And, like, were you intending on moving then back home? And I should ask this, like, home, is it Southeast Minnesota, Rochester for you? And
For me, Rochester. For Danica, Manorville.
Okay.
We intend on coming back home. I kind of...
With a job lined up, or, like, hoping you can get your job back at...
A little bit of both. Okay. A little bit of both. Like, kind of, Christine and Allie reached out to me to see if I'd come back to Tap House, and unfortunately just wasn't working correctly with scheduling and stuff like that, so I ended up not going back there and actually worked for Danica's parents for that fall. And again, went from the easiest summer of my life to the hardest fall of my life because they work in the construction field and I'm outside in like negative 10 degree weather. And I'm like, what is going on?
We're not in Gull Lake anymore.
100%. Just reality check for me. But Danica went back to work at Tap House through the time we opened up the restaurant. So
very cool. And I think that's one nice thing, and maybe you can touch on this, about the restaurant industry. And I don't think it gets talked about enough. Mm-hmm. I have, my father owns a small restaurant, Snappy Stop, yeah. So it's been in my family, and I have friends that are in the restaurant business, and like, you can build, whether you own or don't own, you can build a career mm-hmm. in the restaurant industry, and you can make good money in the restaurant yeah. industry, and I mean, there's a job out there in many mm-hmm. places. I think that's one unique thing the restaurant industry really provides is you can do it in so many places. So maybe talk a little bit about that, of like what the restaurant industry has kind of opened up for, you know, you in that point in your journey as a young
yeah,
professional.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I think it's shown me a lot of skills, like how to deal with people, tough situations, how to, you know, really put away your feelings that you've had that day and go up to work that day. And just, you know, again, from Victoria's, you could be serving and you're dealing with somebody that's just got some really bad news from Mayo, and you just got to put stuff aside and just be there for that person. So you've learned a lot of that. That being said, you always hear that, you know, people going to school for, let's say they're doing like a nursing career on the side, but they're, in order to pay for that, they're serving. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people get stuck in the serving world because it's of the flexibility. Mm-hmm. It's, I talk to all of our food runners who are usually younger and in college that, or high school, that there's no other industry that's as flexible as the restaurant business, as far as like they can be scheduled 4 days next week and somehow get them all covered, and doesn't bother me that, you know, they give away their shifts or anything like that. So very flexible. But yeah, once you work at one restaurant, most of them are usually the same as far as like the how it works and the structure of what you're doing. So it's very flexible. You can go to one restaurant, go to another, and some things may be different POS system and stuff like that, but you can definitely work your way up the ranks. And I've seen it like Chick-fil-A, where you work there a certain amount of years, or, you know, meet some stuff, and all of a sudden you can open up your own. So it's very similar to any restaurant, I think.
And even to your parents' credit, like they've built up their entire lifestyle off the restaurant industry, mm-hmm. yeah. helped raise you and your family, mm-hmm. and like it can provide.
100%. Yes, absolutely. And I think it's become more of a thing nowadays too, where people, and like, you know, people used to think cooks, you know, must not get paid that much, but now they do. And because when you find good employees, whoever it is and whatever role they are, businesses, I think, are more inclined to pay them for that, for what they know, what they're willing to do, and mm-hmm. and availability and all that stuff. So absolutely. Yeah, definitely yeah. can.
So you come back, you're working construction, probably questioning your life decisions at that point in that fall.
Yep.
And then what happens?
And then out of nowhere, Danny and I just started thinking, what if we do this food check thing, but back home, like here while we're at home. And at first we're like, yeah, yeah. And then no, that does not sound fun. But long story short, one of her because she used to coach basketball for Casa Manorville, like eighth grade girls, I think. So the ninth grade girls coach was like, hey, I manage the golf course in Manorville. There's a space above us that's completely empty unless we're doing events. And that's all she said. She was just throwing that out there in case you guys ever want to do anything, because she heard about our summer experience and what we did and all that stuff. So Danica and I talked about it, and we're like, hey, there might be space up there to put a restaurant there. And I know we knew that there had been stuff there before, like other restaurants or certain things. You know, I think Victoria's was in there at one point, doing events like weddings and stuff like that. So we knew there was a kitchen in there and that there was empty space. And that's your kitchen, empty space, what else you need? You know what I mean? So we checked it out, and again, it was kind of that sense where we kind of knew that it was a good idea. Just don't know how else to describe it besides it was a good feeling, good opportunity, a win-win for the golf course. Like if we didn't succeed, we were giving them a free remodel. So if we move out the next year, then they get a free remodel out of it. Mm-hmm. But if we became successful, then we'd hopefully drive traffic through their golf course too. Mm-hmm. Again, talk to both sets of parents. What do you think? And they said yes. And to this day,
we're yes, like, you're crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like, yes, you got this.
Both, 100% both. Like, are you sure this is what you guys want? I don't know. You know, but it just made sense at the time. It was there was a need in the town too, I think, for mm-hmm. that specific type of food and atmosphere. Like, what golf course do you know that there isn't food available? You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. they had like some of the like pizza and stuff, but not a full restaurant there. So mm-hmm. definitely the need for it.
And what was that like going through the leasing conversation, how to structure the deal? like you go from a shack, which someone else is paying the overhead, mm-hmm. to like you have to now start paying the overhead, including utilities.
Yeah.
Like, how did you navigate through that?
Well, honestly, see, that's where I kind of leaned a little bit on Danica's background a little bit, because she went to college. She got, I think, her minor in business. Okay. So she kind of, her college classes showed her how to make a business plan and how to look it over and stuff like that. So we did that. Numbers were good. Everything made sense on paper. So, but when we were talking to the golf course, there was nothing there before. So it had never been really rented out for what we were going to do. So it was kind of a blank sheet where they had nothing to compare to. You know, we both did our backgrounds on rent, how much rent pricing would be and stuff like that. But it was kind of a blank slate. And, you know, we kind of just came up with something and it worked for both.
Did you make the proposal to them and then they had to go and, as a golf course, like, is there a sole owner or is there a board?
There's
like
a board. Okay. So, yeah, we met with two of them, gave them our proposed plan, and they're like, okay, sounds good to us. Now you got to convince the rest of them. And so we're like, oh boy, like, here we go. And
how many is the rest of them?
But that's exactly what we thought. We're like, how many? One, two. And we met with one.
Okay.
One more person. And he kind of looked at us like, yeah, like, I don't know why we wouldn't. Like, sounds like a good idea for us.
It's vacant.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yes. And then.
And you're going to pay us rent, I assume.
Exactly. Right. Yes. And before we finalized the deal, we got thrown into a little bit of a mix where there was four more people introduced.
Interesting.
To make this decision.
The dynamics.
Yes. And we're like, okay, where do these four people come from, you know? And it was tough to come up with like the final plan where everybody was happy, but nonetheless, we did. And we had a lot of help. Again, it was kind of, I believe everything happens for a reason, and you meet people today that you don't know how, but in the future, you're either going to be in business with them or do business with them, or somehow they're going to come back in your life. And it had been a coincidence, but Danica's parents use the same business lawyer that Natalie and Christine used.
Okay.
So he kind of helped us write up the plan because he had been through it before with Victoria's, and it's like, oh, you know, just the world comes around and it's so small, but with his help, we were able to come up with a good plan to present.
And it was a lease, I assume.
Yes.
Cool.
Yep.
And if you want to share this, great. If you don't, it's up to you. But, you know, my question coming from the commercial real estate background is like, you're early on in this venture. You got to pay the money to fix this all up. You're like, we're going to do this. How do you decide how long of a lease you're going to do? Because it's like, we want this for a long time, yeah. But at the same point, if this thing doesn't work, we don't want this anchor. Yeah. So like, how did you navigate that?
See, that was one where it was a little bit of back and forth. But with Roger, who was our lawyer, with his background and knowledge, he kind of knew the sweet numbers to hit.
Yep. A little long, but not too long, yes. A little short.
I believe the way we structured the deal was the lease was a 1-year lease. So at this point, we had already remodeled it, and we would have a year to basically get into some sort of routine, and truly takes a year to see like your business and where you're at. It was tied into it after that first year, then jumped to a 2-year lease, and then a 2-year lease, 2-year lease, and then.
So you had your options to extend.
Correct.
Which gives you the ability to protect the space and protect your investment.
Yeah. So I think all said and done, it was like a 10-year lease plan.
Nice.
But yes. But that after that 1 year, if it went south, we were able to back out, and the golf course, like I said, gets that free remodel. So.
Right. One thing that doesn't get talked about a lot in commercial real estate, and what we often see is, I'll just call it the transparent inventory. Mm-hmm. So you go to LoopNet or you go to Crexy. These are all these listing channels where you can see what's available for lease. And, you know, there's spaces out there. Mm-hmm. There often isn't spaces that are at golf courses out there, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason being because the individuals that tend to own these type of properties, whether it be a board or a community or a nonprofit, what have you, they're not, their core business is not real estate. Mm-hmm. And so they don't even think about marketing this excess space mm-hmm. that's upstairs to an entrepreneur like yourself and Danica. And so there is kind of this off-market commercial real estate inventory that exists. Mm-hmm. Around the country, frankly, that it takes entrepreneurs like yourself and the right connections to help put the pieces together to unlock a business can be opened in this space. And I've seen it, and just on golf courses specifically, they're a great place for entrepreneurs to get a start.
Yeah.
Because they have already customers coming through the front door. Those mm-hmm. customers tend to have some disposable income mm-hmm. that they're willing to spend on food specifically or other things, drinks, you yeah. name it. And they've made the investment in the clubhouse, but no one that's involved with the clubhouse has either restaurant experience or wants to go down this restaurant right. path. Mm-hmm. So it's cool that you were able to unlock that opportunity. And, you know, I hope it stays there for 100 mm-hmm. years, but the life of business, you never know.
Yeah.
And you've now proven that it can be a place that small business can actually start, succeed, and grow. And so you have kind of set this place up for the next entrepreneur when that time comes. Yeah. And it's just fun to see how commercial real estate evolves through that journey.
Yeah, and it, like kind of like you said, it's something that nobody really realizes is there or an opportunity. And ever since we opened up, there's been, we've heard of more cases like ours where people, restaurants have gone into golf courses. And, you know, there's been a couple opportunities that came up to us about doing that again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if we can do it this close, you know, or this soon to when we did Hidden Pines, but there's so many opportunities specifically at golf courses with restaurants going in there. And, you know, I think it's super cool market. So
one of the struggles I see, and I'll relate it to hotels, the public doesn't often think about the restaurant as a place they can go, or it doesn't come top of mind as a place where they'll go out for the night because they relate it to the golf course and they don't relate it to a restaurant.
Yes.
Right. So that brings me down the topic of your name. Like how did that come to be, and what have you done as an entrepreneur to help bring attention to your restaurant, to let people know, hey, we're not just the golf course. Like, you don't need to be you don't need to be a golfer to come here. Right.
Yes. Honestly, it was one of those things where the first thing we thought of when that space was available, and where if you've ever been to Zumba Valley Golf Course, where it is, how you get there, it's like kind of a windy road if you go one way, and it's kind of hidden, tucked back. So the first few times where we were discussing the idea with friends and family, they were like, oh, it's almost like a little hidden gem back there. Like, that's what literally the two words people kept using is hidden gem. And, you know, Hidden Gem Bar and Grill doesn't sound as good as Hidden Pines. And
sounds like a place I don't know if I want to go to.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And so with the help of Jay Hyam, who's helped us kind of design the logo and come up with the name, we're like, hey, I really like the name Hidden. And, you know, I like pine trees and there's a lot of trees, or, you know, just told him there's a lot of trees around. Help us come up with something. And I don't know where we got a name, Hidden Pines, and a bunch of logos, and just fell in love. And we're like, that's perfect. But we have to add some sort of bar and grill or something, because then people are going to be like, that's just a golf course.
The golf course is Hidden Pines.
Exactly,
right.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it's been, the first year was I've always said this to people that ask, and, you know, in a town like Rochester, where, you know, I'm from here, and it's like, when there's a new restaurant that opens up, it's like this shiny object in town, and the first few months everybody flocks it just to check it out and, you know, support and stuff like that. But as an entrepreneur on the other side, you don't really know your true numbers of where you're at, because you're going through this honeymoon phase basically with your business. In Manorville and Caston and small towns, it's kind of the opposite, where you're battling upwards and you have to prove yourself to the community, but also people around you, like, hey, this is, I'm not just some guy that's opening up shop and, you know, trying to make money off of it. It's like, I truly care about the community. Like, I have something here. So it took us a year to bring people in, even from Caston. And to this day, we have people from Caston. Hey, my first time out here. Didn't know you were here. It's like, how do you not know we're here? But that's awesome. Like, good. I'm glad you're here now. Yep. You know,
I've never heard that analogy, but it really resonates with me, because in a small town, part of the magic of it is everybody knows everybody, and you have that trust. And like, all of a sudden a new entrepreneur shows up in town, and obviously it helps that Danica has family there in Manorville. So that gives you some, but, if you didn't have that, I think you have even more of an uphill battle, 100%. Because you're from the big city nearby and, we don't know you.
Yes.
So we're going to make steak in our backyard tonight.
Exactly. And it's so funny, 'cause you know, when we opened up and, like, it's small town, people's talk, and it's okay. It's all right. You know,
it's just reality. It's how it is.
It's just a small town thing.
And frankly, it happens in the big town too. Yes. It's just not as apparent, because it's more, I feel like, in your neighborhood, in your community.
And people are coming up to me. Hey, I heard, you know, your family used to own Five West. And I'm like, what? I'm like, who told you this? Because it's not true. Didn't your parents work at Panda Cooking? I'm like, no. Like, what is going?
You know, I love it.
Yeah, I'm just
it.
Like, what is going on here?
I love so, it.
But with those conversations came the ability to open up to customers.
Like, build actually, relationships.
Yes, this is where we come from. This is why we opened up here. You know, tie Danica into it, and then people are like, oh, okay. Like, you know, they sort of trust you as a business owner, and it's like, again, through the years, we've kind of shown our interest in the community by supporting sporting events or doing other things for, you know, we do wraps for sporting away games for kids. So when they have an away game, we make them a lunch and they take it to, you know, so we've done different things like that. And again, we recently found a lot of success in marketing through TikTok and Instagram and Facebook Reels and stuff like that.
And,
so.
And even in a small town, or who's coming from those? Like, tell me about that.
Honestly, everybody. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, and you know, I'm sure you know this, but different social media, like, depending on the platform, you reach different people. If you want to reach the young kids, younger generation, you go to Snapchat and Instagram because they don't have Facebook. And if you want to reach the older generation, they're all on Facebook, seems mm-hmm. like. So, we throw a video. I'll record a video, edit it, and throw it out across all the platforms.
Same video. Okay.
Different.
Repurpose it for the platform.
Yes. Of course, because videos, you know, music strikes on Instagram, not the same as Facebook and stuff like that. But, yeah, Facebook reaches a lot of Rochester, and so does Instagram. Mm. But also Facebook brings in our regulars that, you know, community people that haven't come out, you know, in a couple of weeks, and they'll come back out because they saw a video.
I was going to say, it's almost those like fans, right? They know you, they've seen you, and they're like, all of a sudden you show up in their feed and you remind them,
yeah,
hey, remember me? You should come out and visit Danica and I and the team.
Exactly. And the community of Casa Manorville and, you know, Byron and stuff have gotten to know us and our employees a lot. So when they see them on a video, it's almost like, I know them or I know that person. Yeah, you know, so it's super funny when they come up to me and like, you're the guy from the TikToks, and that's our bartender. He's from the TikToks. I'm like, and they love it. So I love making them. Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about this off camera, but the ebbs and flows of making them. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. As an entrepreneur, you have so much to do. You got to open the restaurant, order the food. You got to make sure it's staffed. And then you got to go make some TikToks. Apparently, like, come on, man. Like, how is an entrepreneur going to do all that? How is that ebb and flows for you? And like, one thing I'm always fascinated in, too, is you mentioned the bartender doing it. Like, how do you get your team involved in it?
I think it's one of those things where I had the idea. I don't know where it started, but I just saw a video as I was scrolling Instagram, and it had to do with a restaurant. And I just sat there and laughed and laughed. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, we could do this with our people. So I did. I, you know, got my phone and set up a tripod, and we filmed it. And at first my staff's like, what are you doing? Like, you know, what's going on? But we posted it, got a ton of feedback, a lot of shares, people commenting, oh, I can't believe, you know, again, they just resonate with our staff. And that's, oh, you know, it's so-and-so. And then I think off that, our staff kind of bought into it and into the vision of, hey, people see you on these videos, but, you know, it's more than just, you make somebody laugh. And when they come in, they tell you, hey, I laughed at your video 100 times. And it's just a good feeling. And then again, with the growth and success of TikTok and everybody's watching these reels, our staff just fell in love with making them too. And so when I would run into these creative blocks and I'm like, I don't know what else to do now. And my staff, I'll come into work and my staff will be like, hey, what are we doing today? What video are we recording? I'm like, you tell me, because I'm out mm-hmm. of ideas. But yeah, now they love making them, and it's been a while since we made one, so probably should get back to it. But it's just one of those things. It's another marketing strategy as a business owner mm-hmm. That you just kind of have to tap into, and if you don't, then somebody else will. So you might as well just do it too.
Have you seen Instagram Edits, that new app?
Yes, I have.
So what I've liked about that one is you can make the videos, save them as a project, come back to the project, edit it in the, you know, it doesn't live in your camera roll. Because mm-hmm. I feel like when it lives in your camera roll, it gets buried.
Yes.
Because you're taking pictures of all kinds of random stuff where mm-hmm. you make it in your edits app and then you come back to it to finish it while you're sitting on the couch watching a football game or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked about Instagram edits is when you export it, unlike TikTok, mm-hmm. it doesn't give the watermark. So mm-hmm. that video you can repurpose, as you mentioned, onto the different platforms very easy. Where if you download it from TikTok, you got the TikTok symbol. And, you know, mm-hmm. based on what you hear or see, it's like that doesn't help your algorithm when you're trying to post. But what do you think about this thought? And this is something that has come to mind for me. My father, my sister, they work in the restaurant business. My father won't do this, but I think it's a good idea. He's not one to go and make these type of investments. But I think every restaurant should have a dedicated phone mm-hmm. with service mm-hmm. specific to the restaurant. And so back to your comment of mm-hmm. your team member goes, what are we doing? If they see ideas throughout the week. Yeah. They just text it or send it to the account. You pull up that phone. The one struggle I've seen, including our own social media, is the one, you don't want to post the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So, like, right. You're careful with your phone.
100%.
Otherwise, you get in this place of, like, you're trying to create, and then your phone rings, mm-hmm. and then you're like,
right.
That just ruined the whole vibe. Now I got to go do this, or yes. I got a text message. So, yes. What's your thoughts on that? How, if I explain that to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, so a lot of, good thing is that we use an app called Seven Shifts. I think a lot of restaurants use that app. So
okay.
it's a scheduling app. The purpose of it is to make picking up shifts and swapping shifts is so much easier, and it doesn't lead to me getting a text message all the time about, hey, we're swapping, when it doesn't matter what mm-hmm. who's swapping, because the shift is covered and that's what's important. But it leads to messaging on that app. So if it's something important, it buzzes my phone. But if it's something like, I can make specific categories. So we have a category, video ideas. And so people will...
Within that app.
Correct. And send links to me and TikTok links and ideas. And I get all the notifications, but they're all silent because it's in that group chat.
Yep.
So, but everybody's in the same place. And so if someone sends me this, usually what would happen before, somebody would send me a video, but I already got that video 10 times from other people. And it's like, okay.
And then it's in a text message. Yes. And it's buried in many text
yes.
messages.
Yes.
Okay, so going down that vein of thought is like, maybe it's not necessarily a phone with service,
yep.
but it's an app
yes.
that this communication can exist in
yes.
that makes it where when you're in that mindset, you can very easily go there
yes.
and work through those ideations exactly. and creations.
Yeah, because it stays in there. Also, you know, you got people sending you stuff on Instagram, and then that gets saved and buried in that app, and then mm-hmm. you get, you know, TikTok, and that gets saved and buried. Yes, yes.
Technology.
I know, you love it and hate it.
Well, cool. So you get the restaurant going, slowly but surely you build your customer base. What are some memories you have of, like, either struggles or success as you go through that growth of building your restaurant?
One of the biggest struggles that we went through was consistency as far as busy, how busy we're going to be, what time of day we're going to be busy at.
How to staff it.
100%, exactly. And there was to this day, Dan kind of has nightmares about it, because the first, like, 6 months we opened, again, we're fighting this uphill battle to get our name out there, prove to people who we are. There's this gap between, I want to say, 2:30 and 4 o'clock, where people just don't come in because they're getting out of school, you know, probably off of work, and they're coming from Rochester back home to Casson or wherever. And so nobody's really going out to eat during that time. And in restaurants in general, I think it's a slower time. But we just would sit there with nobody coming in. And so we would, you know, cut the kitchen staff, send everybody home in the front of the house, and just be me and Danica back there. And she'd be usually in her back corner closet just thinking, contemplating life decisions, like, maybe we should close for this hour and a half, maybe we shouldn't, you know. But long story short, we were able to just push through that season, and just, you know, it's so important. And I think restaurants like Five West do a great job of that, and just consistency. Like, no matter what time of day you go, no matter what day of the week you go, like, if you order something, it's always going to come out that way. And, you know, every day they're open till 10 o'clock. They're open for breakfast every single day. You know, they never change it up last minute. I think for a lot of smaller restaurants and smaller businesses, it's so easy to do that, to get scared of, okay, there's no business coming in, I have to change my hours and put a sign on the door. But I think that's what kills a lot of businesses, is when they start to do that, because the customer never gets to they never know, okay, is this business open now, or are they closed? So that was one of our biggest struggles, was just to push through that slow time.
And it makes me think of that saying, is you have one time for that first impression. Mm-hmm. And so if you come to the door and it's closed, that's that first impression that gets you, that Hidden Pines place, I went there and it was closed.
Exactly, yes. And again, just something that we've seen a lot of restaurants struggle with in small towns is that very thing. It's like, if you're going to make a decision to do that, then you just want to own that decision and stick to it consistently. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're going to close from 2:30 to 4 every day, just make that decision, just do that every day. Mm-hmm. Don't make exceptions because you've reserved a party that day. You know what I mean? Because then it gets confusing. People don't know what's going on, and that's the last thing you want people to do is to guess or have to look up what you're open. You know? Mm-hmm.
I'll give this one to you, and you'll probably get a kick out of it. It was on Facebook, as they now have all these Facebook groups. This one, I think, was in Red Wing, and it was about Smoke and Oaks, and someone had said, what's going on at Smoke and Oaks? They're closed. Mm-hmm. And then I think this goes back to consistency. Well, it was a Monday, yeah, and they're always closed on Mondays. If you go into the comments, you will see their raving fans are like, it's Monday.
Yeah, they're closed.
Posted the hours. They've been closed for Monday for a long time. Like, and then the fans all come in and comment all that stuff.
Exactly.
And it's like, because they've built up that reputation, yes, that that's our day off. Mm-hmm. And even the customers know that, which, yes, was cool, yes, to see.
Exactly.
Because very quickly on the internet, as we know, it could, mm-hmm, get twisted into many things.
Yes.
And it was like, no, the consistency shines through of, yes, this restaurant owner has been closed on Mondays for, looks like, years, yeah, based on the comments.
Yes, and when you do make that decision either to close or to stay open and just push through, even if to this day from 2:30 to 4 we were dead, you know, just nothing coming in, we'd still be open because, mm-hmm, it's just easier that way, you know. And, you know, thankfully, ever since we made that decision, people come in all the time now from 2:30 to 4, and they know that we're going to be open. And usually it's golfers coming in after the round of golf because, you know, golf courses are slow at that time of day because everybody's, yep, in school, you know, in the summertime especially. So it's definitely paid dividends to be open from that time.
So that was one of your struggles. How about, yep, just something that stands out as a success, whether it was a customer saying something or just that feeling when you're like, you and Danica are like, I think we're onto something.
Yeah.
What comes to mind?
I think the biggest thing for us is finding the value of, I don't want to say not only employees, but the customer. So we've created a business and a restaurant where our employees feel valued. And that's just been such a great feeling because, you know, I'll get invited to my staff's kids' football game. You know, it's the fourth grader playing football for the first year. And it's like, I love to go to that stuff because I like to show that, hey, like, you know, you work for me and you work really hard and dedicate your time. I'm willing to do the same for you on the back end. And again, that's paid dividends time and time again to just build some level of trust. In the same way with customers and guests coming in, it's like, you know, we know our restaurant's not perfect. It's far from, but we definitely hear their opinions and their advice. So if they're ever like, hey, you should do, you know, beef tacos, it's like, that might sound like the dumbest idea to me, but all of a sudden I'll put it out there and it's like, people love it. And it's like, so we really like pay attention to what people are saying, what they're wanting, because at the end of the day, without those two roles, you know, you could have the employees be really good, but no customers because you don't care about them, you know, or you could have customers that you care about so much and you do everything for, but your employees don't feel valued and then you start to lose one. So I think that's been our biggest success is that we found that you need both of those to be happy and working great together. So,
and then we got to hear a funny story. Like, come on, there's something funny that's happened at the restaurant.
You know, one that, since we're in this time of year, you know, every year doesn't fail that we get a phone call, people asking to reserve our igloos. And towards the end of the season, when spring comes around, you know, people want to reserve the igloos still. And they're like, hey, we had a phone call every year. Again, does not fail. We'll get a phone call and be like, hey, you know, just wondering if I'm able to reserve your igloo for, you know, late February. Yeah, absolutely. Like, what time? What are you thinking? And he goes, wait. Do they melt? Like, are they going to be melted by the time if it's a warm spring? And I'm just like, nope, they're not real igloos. Like, they're not made out of ice. Like,
you're not hand making these igloos? Come on, Miguel.
So I'm like, no, I promise you, you'll be fine. And they're like, oh, okay. Just making sure. And it's just so funny because I'm just on the phone like.
I like it.
Yeah, so like it's it. Great.
I feel like there's a TikTok in itself of you have to be like, this year we're going to the real igloo and start making it and then get like three blocks up and be like, nah, we're just going back to, yeah, this back is to way too home. Much work.
Yeah, exactly. It's so shocking. And sometimes I think it's the same person calling back and asking. I'm like, you're just doing this now, you know, yeah, but it's so fun. Yeah. It's so
fun. Now you're messing with me. That's great.
Yeah.
One thing I want to talk on is, so your entrepreneurial journey obviously is, we've explored, is the restaurant business, but at some point in this journey, you and Danica both get your real estate license. Mm-hmm. So talk about that. Like, what is leading you down that path? And yeah.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it kind of goes back to Natalie. A lot of my life does. Because one day, again, I was just frustrated in the restaurant world when I was like 18, 17. And Natalie looks at me and she goes, you know, like, you'd be really good at, you're good with people. I think you'd really make a good realtor and just, you know, real estate really, something in that world. Mm. And I, at the time, I kind of took it as, you know, like a grain of salt and just like, okay, thank you. Appreciate you telling me that. It means a lot, especially coming from her. And then a couple of years later, I'm just like, hey, you know, maybe I should just give it a shot and see what happens. And
how old are you at that point?
Probably about 2021 or so.
So were you working in Gull Lake? Were you working in Rochester?
So I got my license before I left for Gull Lake.
Okay.
So kind of the same time that Tap House started opening up is when I got my license. Again, put it on the back burner when I did finally get it because Tap House was open and had to focus on that. And then Gull Lake happened and, again, just was putting it on the back burner, but I had my license.
Mm-hmm.
Came back home, and during that time I was working the construction field. I was like, okay, let's try this real estate thing now because that construction is not for me. You know, shout out to those guys to do it because a lot of respect for them. And
the restaurant opportunity of Hidden Pines had not popped up at that point.
Yeah, so I'm starting to put time and energy into real estate. And I've always loved, I mean, you hear all the time, you know, people get into real estate because they watch the shows and, and oh, I watched Selling Sunset and, you know, that's what it's going to be like. And it's not at all, nothing similar to it. So,
Selling Cast. Let's
go. Exactly. So, but I've always loved, honestly, those shows and just the thought of helping somebody, you know, buy a home more so. Not like a, you're not like a cashier, you know, somebody's not going, picking out what they want and you're just, checking them on, but you know, it's
a big decision.
Yes. And
there's so much joy in that big decision.
100%. You know, there's also struggle and a lot of,
yeah. Let's just talk about the joy.
Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, it's just to be part of that for somebody. It's honestly the best feeling ever. So I truly just love the business itself. I love the helping people in general. So, got into it and started with Pursuit Real Estate Group, who kind of taught me a lot of what I knew at the time. And it was less, I want to say, scary for me because smaller company, you know, kind of few agents here and there. So it's not like I'm being thrown into the fire at, you know, one of the bigger brokerages. But no, it was awesome. I wouldn't have been as far as I am now without Pursuit. So I worked there for, I want to say, a couple of years maybe. And then a year and a half ago or so, I signed up with Dwell Realty Group, so I've been with Dwell since. And
they're local here in Rochester?
Local as well, and I just love local, you know. So, yeah. I love everything about them that they represent and stuff, and you still get that local feeling, so it's not like you're almost detached from people. You can let them know, hey, we're local, so, you know, we have the ability to be flexible here and there, you know. So, and same thing in Pursuit was just, every agent there truly works with each other, and it doesn't feel competitive. It feels like you're helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just loved it. And, you know, back to Danica, it's like we've worked really good together all the time. We work either really well at the time or, you know, we're just not meeting eye to eye. But again, it just helps you build each other up and stuff. So randomly I was like, Danica, what if you get your license too? Because a lot of times I'll be helping couples and, you know, the guys or the husbands will be like, hey, what about a man cave down here? I'm like, yes. And then the wife's looking at me like, no. And I'm like, who do I make happy here? You know? So I'm like, Danica, I need help. You know, you get one side. Usually she agrees with one side or the other, and I'll agree with the other side, and it's perfect. But
so I'm curious how that balance works of, I mean, it's another business at the end of the day. And how do you balance both? And, you know, what are you doing to balance both?
I think it's one of those things, again, where when we opened up, just wasn't in our mindset. We kind of had to put it in the back burner for that time.
Because you still had your license, but you're like, I'm not going to go show houses full time.
Yes.
I don't have the time.
Yeah, and at that point, like, my thought process was it's unfair for my staff to put them in a crunch situation like that if I do have to leave, but also for the client that I'm helping. And if they want to see a house and it's a Friday night, you know, and I'm in the kitchen and I can't, that's not fair for them too. And they deserve someone that's able to give them that attention. But ever since then, we've been able to build our team at Hidden Pines, and we have managers now in place. And so if I ever have to leave last minute, the restaurant doesn't revolve around me or Danica. You know, we help it, but a lot of it's because of the employees that work there. So,
which relates back to, in my own mind, and how you explained it is, Tap House West End.
Yes.
You know, it's like you built up that team. And so you kind of got to that place with Hidden Pines where you have a good team to be able to delegate and continually grow.
Exactly. And absolutely. And having Danica there too, like, you know, business partner like her, and it's like, hey, if I have a showing that wants to be, if I have a client requesting a showing like in an hour, or whatever it is, and Danica, yeah, go, you know, it's a priority now for sure. So it's definitely helps that we're in a restaurant business that's very flexible. But yeah, now we're able to also incorporate that and do that full time too.
And what do you like about the real estate business that is different than the restaurant business? I know you mentioned the transaction and just how big it is for some people, but just even more, just like What is it about real estate that stands out?
Honestly, I think it's about teaching. I love to teach people what I know, and obviously I don't know everything about real estate, and I'm sure I'll learn more as I go. But it's just about teaching that first home buyer like what they're truly investing in, and the like the purpose of a home. It's not just to have a place to live, but also to build equity and build for the future, and to explain to them different types of programs and what's available, what, you know, what decision to make, or how to make their decision easier to make. Mm-hmm. That's something that, you know, I can't get from the restaurant business. I can't, you know, tell someone, hey, you should go with this burger over that burger. It's not that
big. You'll be way healthier.
Exactly.
Come back to me in 7 days and watch.
Yeah, exactly. So real estate is just, again, about teaching. I love to help people, and I feel like I really, truly am teaching somebody, you know, something sometimes. And again, I learn a lot too from, I've helped clients that are electricians, and, you know, they're teaching me about what an electrical panel in a home does. And I'm like, hey, I love it. I love to learn. So definitely.
And I think the other piece is, as you mentioned, personally, that stands out to me is equity. Like, you can build a nest egg wealth savings through real estate. Mm-hmm. And if you're living in that home for X amount of years, if you do it right, if you buy it right, you're going to have something that has value that you just don't get through renting. And like, it's so cool to be able to see people live that through and be a part of that journey.
Yes, exactly. And so again, I've become like the go-to real estate agent with my friends, where it's like, they'll ask me a question. And like one, my buddy asked me the other day, is like, Miguel, should I wait to buy my first house? Because, you know, prices are kind of high right now. And to be able to teach them like the other side of that, like, okay, you can wait for them to go down, but every year you wait, you're missing out on building equity for it. You know, and it's like just conversations like that that lead to other things. It's just, I love that about it. So for sure.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, it's been a real growth journey for you. And if you just had to, you know, talk to anybody that's looking at the restaurant industry, what would be some of the things that stand out to you as far as advice that you might recommend?
Yeah, I would say to really pick your niche, whether that be small town, you know, big city, and to find the missing piece. I think that's, again, what helped Danica and I, was that it felt like a no-brainer at the time because it was something that was needed. Mm-hmm. So even if there's an idea that you have out there that's been done somewhere else, you can bring that to where you want it to be. Like take, you know, recommendations, or take a little bit of everywhere you've gone to if you're thinking about the journey, and what do you truly love about it. I think that if you find that missing piece in a community, that would really, they'll be successful doing that. And on top of that, just being able to remember that without customers and guests coming in and employees working for you, everything else doesn't matter. You can be making profit like crazy, but you don't have any of the other two, and it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? So truly focus on customers first and employees second, and then yourself last, unfortunately. But yeah, that will get you through the hard days. Will make you wake up the next day not wanting to
go do something else.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
That's awesome. Well, thank you, Miguel. Thank you for joining and sharing about your journey. And it's just awesome to learn more about Hidden Pines. And I honestly cannot wait to get back there and have some food. It's been too long, probably been a month, and I need to get back. For those that are interested in stopping at Hidden Pines, what are your hours? And maybe what is one of the seasonal things that they can find on the menu right now that they definitely need to check out?
Yeah, so hours vary a little bit, but we are open every day at 11.
Okay.
Monday, Sunday, we're closed at 8, but every other day for sure, 9 o'clock. Something on the menu that's very popular right now is our rice bowls. Like I said, if we have any sort of bowl, got to try it, people.
And what's in it?
It's just cilantro lime rice that we do. Right now we have a fajita and a nacho bowl that's really popular that people love. And I'm sure next month we'll have another bowl. And it's like, just, and give us ideas. We love ideas, seriously. A lot of our menu is based on what people want. And just real quick, one thing that we wanted to do with our restaurant is to make it a one-page menu, to make it not where it's a lot of options and stuff like that. But with all the specials we've done, you know, for the monthly specials, and our customers like, you got to put this on the menu. I'm like, we can't, because that makes it not a special anymore, you know? And it's like, somehow they're all on the menu. So till our font gets to be too small to read, we're going to keep putting them on the menu. So,
all right.
Yes.
There you go. Thanks so much for watching the Real Growth Podcast. Be sure to stop at Hidden Pines and see Danica, the team, and Miguel. And we'll catch you on the next episode.